I'm Hillary McClure, Multimedia Director at Cybercrime Magazine. I'm here today with Diane Genesek, NSA Training Director, Commandant of the National Cryptologic School. The NSA is a true global training enterprise with more than 12 campuses, 4 cryptologic centers, and training schools located here and overseas. Their prestigious National Cryptologic School, NCS, delivers advanced classes in language, cryptology, leadership, education, and business expertise for its national security, civilian, and military workforce. To learn more about the NSA and the National Cryptologic School, visit nsa.gov. Welcome, Diane. It's so great to have you with us today.
Oh, thank you, Hillary. Thank you for having me, and thanks to Steve Morgan for the invitation.
Yeah, of course, our pleasure. And Diane, to start, share with us a little about your background, what interested you about cybersecurity, and ultimately led you to where you are today.
Well, great. Thank you for that question, Hillary. So I had an interesting background in that I started off in the legal field in Washington, D.C., which is a phenomenal place to start. With the Department of Justice, I worked at the White House. I also worked at the Pentagon, and I also served as the Chief Legal Officer for the Privacy and Civil Liberties Oversight Board. And the more I did, the more policy and technology work I did, I realized the intersection of that is really the protection of information and the vulnerabilities, and the risk to an agency or federal agency or business for that matter is in the cybersecurity area. So I jumped in 2013 into this space with a lot of other background, and I took my CSSP and I've never looked back, and it's been a wonderful experience because there's been so much interest, you know, across this nation in shoring up our defenses for cybersecurity attacks, both by criminals and by nation states. And it's just a wonderful area to be in because it's so rewarding knowing that you're giving back and you're really protecting America's freedoms, America's intellectual property, and just the very liberties that we have every day.
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you to you and all of your colleagues for doing that, for that great work. And it's so important for all of us, like you said. So thank you.
Yeah, absolutely.
And can you expand upon your role as the NSA Training Director, Commandant of the National Cryptologic School for us? I mean, including, you know, what types of curriculum and programming you oversee as well?
Sure. So it is a mouthful, the National Cryptologic School. Commandant, and I don't look like a commandant, you know, but the title's been around for a number of decades, and it's a term used, you know, for military educational institutions. So it's a pleasure. I get the distinct honor of serving in that capacity. And as you mentioned, we have multiple campuses. We work 24/7 in terms of what our mission space is, and you know, training our amazing military and civilian affiliates. So I have the distinct honor to help lead that organization, but I do it with a team, so make sure I put that out there. I have a great team. So a little bit about the National Security Agency, and that will naturally explain what I'm doing in the education and professional development arm of the agency. So the National Security Agency, people may not be aware of it, but we have two actual distinct missions. One is in foreign signals intelligence, which allows us to generate insights into the activities of nation states who want to do us, right, of course, and our allies harm. And then we have the second very equally important mission of cybersecurity, which we're tasked with defining the standards for the Department of Defense for U.S. government classified systems. And so we often are asked to apply mediation and mitigation capabilities in cyber defense for the U.S. government. So you can imagine how that could be applied just looking in the last year, how those skills could come into play. So the National Security Agency workforce, as I mentioned, is a global, you know, we work these two critical missions 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and probably every, continent in terms of, you know, how we apply what we're doing. The national security workforce is highly, high performing, right? We've got highest concentrations of mathematicians and computer scientists, but that's not enough, right? They have to keep getting better in terms of their skill set because our enemies never stop, and Americans deserve the best, right? So we do what traditional schools and colleges can't do. So our first director had the foresight to, you know, establish the school, which is called the National Cryptologic School. We actually teach at the associate's, bachelor's, master's, and PhD level. Some of our courses couldn't even be accredited because they're highly sensitive, and we wouldn't really offer them up to our accreditors to take a look at them in terms of the transferring of credits. But it's pretty exciting. So I get to be the commandant. And with that, we have four colleges, and the two that get the most amount of attention is our College of Cyber and our College of Cryptology. So cryptology is a fascinating arena. And so we're an interesting school because we do on-the-job training, like more of a like hands-on as well as true educational doctrines in terms of, you know, concrete how to write, you know, critical thinking, analytic skills, and things along those lines. So most institutions are either a vocational school or like a degree granting institution. We're almost both, which makes it very difficult. Not only that, we're complex in terms of our subject matter. We got to stay current, and we're global, and we teach military and civilians worldwide. So it's really exciting. It's a high challenge, but we love it. We love being able to serve our country. We also work hard to ensure that the work that we do, the education that we provide, provides our military affiliates transfers credits so they can, you know, get a bachelor's degree while they're at the agency, so they can transfer take those skill sets into an educational degree so they can get a job in that area upon their, you know, completion of their military service. So we offer to do all of that, especially during COVID. We did that ubiquitously. So we have to be, you know, where the student needs it, at the time that they need it, at the level that they need it. So whether you're working with someone who may be 19, 20, recently enlisted with a year or two educational experience, or someone who is 30 years in with multiple degrees, things are always changing. For example, with AI, data science, 5G, there's lots of changes going on. So we have to keep changing and, you know, being agile and being relevant. So it's fun, it's complex, and it's exciting.
Yeah, it sounds like it. That sounds awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the Gen Cyber program provides summer cybersecurity camp experiences for students and teachers at the K-12 level. So Diane, tell us about why getting kids interested in cybersecurity at a young age is so important, and how folks can get involved with Gen Cyber.
Oh, that's a great question. So let me just back it up just a second to say,
sure,
why would I be doing Gen Cyber, right? Because so here I am, I'm training these experts in cybersecurity at the, you know, highest levels in the military and the civilian. So we were seen as a, you know, expert across the federal government in terms of what we do. So we were asked by Congress and by our overseers to develop a program to get younger kids more interested in cyber. So here I have this incredible mission of teaching these experts, but then I have a very exciting mission outreach area, which is very much more public, in trying to establish a pipeline of students that want to go into cybersecurity. And they've done studies, and they said, you know, if kids can't see it, they don't want to be it. They don't understand it. You know, they're not going to say, I want to do that. You know, I want to be a fireman, I want to be a policeman. Well, they can't say, I want to be a cybersecurity expert if they don't never seen someone or ever heard of it. So the Gen Cyber program was established to develop and promote cybersecurity awareness and to teach sound cybersecurity fundamentals for students at the K-12 level. We really do focus on the middle school age because that's when you want to get kids really interested. They may not have it in their, you know, their regular grade school or middle school curriculum. So we want to give them opportunities to learn about it, just be exposed to it. So they're free camps. That's one of the criteria so that, you know, there's no barrier to entry. We've even have some camp counselors. They're so creative. They'll go pick the students up to make sure that they can get there. And some of them have residential programs because we even have some that are out in the Midwest and they may actually serve Indian reservations, and they'll actually provide the residential opportunities for the students while they're there. So it's just making kids aware that there's something going on. So for example, kids are savvy about their smartphones, right? They know how the smartphone works, but what about opening up that smartphone? You know, how do those apps work? How does someone steal your identity? How does someone spoof your phone? So what, you know, that all of that is one thing. Once you start asking that, you might know how to make that app work, but what is that app, and how did that come into play? How did they get on your telephone? Who developed that? How did they, what did they do to make that happen? So the Gen Cyber Program seeks to ignite and sustain cybersecurity interest. And we've done studies. We asked the kids on the first day, because some of the parents put them in, they didn't even know what they were getting into. And we asked them at the last day, and they're like, wow, now I get it. It affects every area of my life. And I've never really thought about it because it wasn't really talked about. So there was a camp, since I mentioned the smartphone and opening up the smartphone, there's a camp, and more than one camp has done this, but the camp that started it first was out in South Dakota, Dakota State University, where they had people donate their computers that they were done with, and they actually let the kids, primarily middle school girls, because they focused on middle school girls at this particular camp called Cyber, open up the computer literally with a hammer, with a screwdriver, and see what the components were, and so that it wasn't scary, right? Yeah. Oh, there is just hardware, and then how does the hardware interact with the software? So it's pretty exciting. So it's just being really creative. 67% of the host schools reported that the Gen Cyber camps resulted in increased enrollment in cybersecurity programs. 56% said it was the first time they've even heard about cybersecurity. So these are young students coming through. They didn't really hear about it, didn't know what it was. Like I said, they may have been enrolled in it because it was available. And then once they get on it, they get kind of hooked, especially the girls getting more excited, which is great because of the disparate numbers in terms of women in STEM. So if you're interested, we don't do selection of the students, but we do selection of the camps and fund those camps. So you would go to gen-cyber, so gen-cyber.com, and then click on locate a camp. You'll see the camps that are in your state. And, pay attention, because as those camps come up, they do get, quote unquote, sold out very, very quickly because they're so fun and they usually get good doodads. Last year we had some camps and the schools were so creative, usually they're colleges, and they sent the students the stuff that they would need in advance at home, or if they had a backpack that they were giving them, they'd sent the stuff at home to them in advance, so they had it for the camp. So it was pretty fun, even if it was virtual.
Yeah, that sounds like so much fun, and so grateful for Gen Cyber to help build awareness with kids at that age, because to your point, that's middle school is around that age where you start thinking, what do I want to be? Like, what do I want to do? What do I want to be? And unless parents are in the cyber industry themselves, it can be intimidating to know how to, approach getting kids involved with cybersecurity and kind of destigmatizing a lot of that, because it can be kind of scary.
Yeah, right.
So, you mentioned a couple of the camps, but are there any others that you'd want to mention while we're on here together?
Sure. So I appreciate you offering that up. I forgot to mention National Science Foundation. They've been a supporter from the beginning. So the National Security Agency and the National Science Foundation came together to sponsor this. So it was really just the interest to get more kids interested. So what we're realizing, right, is that the gap is they think that there's going to be about 1.8 million unfilled cybersecurity jobs by next year. Wow. Right now, if you look at cyberseek.org, I believe they're putting the number about 300,000, but that's just who they survey, right? There's a lot of small businesses that need help. They don't put a vacancy out, so there's not a vacancy to be listed, but they need the help and they don't have that talent. So what's going on is they're really saying, how can we lower the barrier to entry? How can we make it more enticing? And how can we be more open to students of all needs, all abilities, right? So there's a camp that's done by University of Alabama at Huntsville for the deaf and hard of hearing. There was a camp actually done in California for ADHD students as well. So they are really trying to get students of all abilities to get into this space. There's even been studies done with students with Asperger's work very well in the area of cybersecurity. So we really are trying to pull all abilities into the deficiency space. And so we're being as creative as possible. Texas A&M has been very creative as well. So just a lot of places are just trying to open the aperture by making the educational opportunities more available. And then another way that we're doing that as well, and we can talk about this later if you want to, is as we get into the Centers of Academic Excellence program, we are trying to get more two-year colleges, community colleges interested. So as we get these kids interested, maybe at the middle school and high school level, they may not be ready for a four-year school, or they may not have the resources or the finances. So we're really, we're providing a lot of opportunities at the two-year community college level to get these students exposed, interested, and educated, so we can just have more hands on deck, right? I mean, aren't all of our critical infrastructure sectors in the United States, water, energy, critical manufacturing, the defense industry, telecommunications, manufacturing, finance, healthcare, I mean, transportation, they all need cybersecurity individuals and people to help. So if we can get the students to start at a young age, and then really just keep them growing and keep developing them, we'll have more people. So that's the goal, is to be stronger. Is, you know, our mantra is it's a team sport. We're stronger together by being as creative as we can and providing as many opportunities that are available to everybody.
Yeah, absolutely. And I definitely want to come back to CAE and two-year community colleges in a bit. But it's also great to hear that the camps are very inclusive and celebrating neurodiversity. That's something we talk about a lot here on the show as well.
Great. That's important.
It is. It is. And the, from my understanding, the current call for proposals is open for camps and it closes on April 2nd, 2021 this year. How does the application process work?
Oh, well, thank you for mentioning that. So generally it's high schools teaming up with colleges. Delaware last year teamed, school in the state of Delaware teamed with another school that had done it before, because Delaware didn't have a camp before. So usually it's a teaming arrangement between a high school and maybe a college, saying, hey, we have a need here. We don't haven't done it before. We'd like to submit a proposal. So usually they partner with someone that may have done it before just to understand how to do it, at least for the first time. And they just, all the information is at gen-cyber.com, and they'll even have information sessions as well. So if you're interested, please apply, because we are really trying to increase the diversity in the geographic locations of the camps, diversity in the student population that's attending the camps, as, you know, just being as inclusive as we can.
Yeah, absolutely. Wonderful. And another K through 12 program funded by the NSA is StarTalk, which is administered by the National Foreign Language Center. Can you tell us more about this program and how it's helping those students learn critical need languages?
Yeah, thanks for asking that question. So as we know, after 9/11, President George Bush took a look at it under this National Security Language Initiative, which noticed that we didn't really have students enrolled in the study of languages, especially in languages that we don't speak in the United States, right, but are spoken by our foreign adversaries. So they wanted to get more programs started to get children interested in some of the languages that weren't commonly taught. So the StarTalk program, which is really Start Talking, it's a phenomenal program. It's the Gen Cyber program was modeled after the StarTalk model, which was a summer program that was for free that would encourage students to do study this and then follow it through. It's taken off pretty well, and it's still incredibly relevant. They're actually looking at trying to do things with language more year-round, because you want the children and the students to keep their proficiency up, which is really neat. So the National Security Agency has partnered with the National Foreign Language Center at the University of Maryland, which is kind of nice because they're right down the street, but not literally, but, you know, kind of technically down the highway. So we can get there if we need to. And so we partnered with them, and they're natural experts in helping teachers developing quality and effective curriculum. So if you're looking at, you don't usually find a high school teacher that teaches Arabic, Chinese, Hindi, Korean, Persian, Russian, Turkish, or Urdu. So we have to, I mean, that's just not there, right?
Yeah.
So we have to help promote that. And it's all in the national defense of our country, right? We can't pay attention to what our adversaries are doing if we can't even read their newspapers, right? We got to be able to understand kind of what's going on culturally. What are the dynamics going on? Mm. So you want them to have that, at least have that understanding of what's going on in the country, so that we can be more effective in our role as a national security agency in our defense and our intelligence mission.
That's fabulous. And coming back to CAE, the NSA also has the National Centers of Academic Excellence in Cybersecurity, or the NCAEC. So the combination of these programs that we've mentioned so far, Gen Cyber, StarTalk, and NCAEC, they lay the foundation for a holistic cyber path. And, NCAEC, there we go. This program is managed by the National Cryptologic School and includes various federal partners. So tell us more about the cyber program and how it works with academic institutions.
Yeah, thanks for that question. So the program started over 20 years ago. We hit our 20th anniversary a year and a half ago, I believe. You can find out about the CAE program, Centers of Academic Excellence, on YouTube through searching Centers of Academic Excellence, NSA. There's videos about different schools that had these CAE programs. So essentially, it's an imprimatur or a kind of a stamp of approval that the schools have met rigorous standards or the gold standard for cybersecurity education in three areas: research, cyber defense, and cyber operations. So it's where our nation needs those skills. And it's not just to come and work for the government. I mean, we're developing these programs with these, partnering with these schools so that they can develop students that will go into banking and healthcare and transportation, where we need it as a country. So it's not just for us. We work with federal partners. We work with the Department of Homeland Security, CISA. We work with FBI. We've worked with the Department of Commerce and the National Science Foundation to come together to say, how can we make this program even better? Where can we move it to so that we keep evolving as the country evolves? One of the more recent things was, I mentioned previously, was the two-year community colleges. Some students don't have the ability to go to a four-year college. Right. Two-year may be the best thing for them, just mentally, emotionally, financially. They may want to be closer to home, go to that local community college, get that discipline, and then really branch out from there. So we have vested through this partnership to the other federal agencies with tremendous amount of congressional support. The Department of Defense has supported us. Director of National Intelligence Organization, they've supported us to say, hey, you know what? We need this for the country. NSA, can you shepherd the program for the country? And really, we're in a shepherding role, right? Because we've got folks with 300, I think we had 338 schools. We may have just grown past that number across multiple states. So, you know, we can't do all the work, of course. So we kind of help enable it, help create that connective tissue, help create the opportunities to develop cybersecurity education, those partnerships, encourage the students to go into the field. And then we also have scholarships for students that go to CAE programs as well. So it's exciting.
That's very exciting. And that makes a lot of sense for the two-year associate degree schools as well. As we talk about the current cyber talent gap, you mentioned, you know, unfilled roles earlier. We need to get more folks on the job training, working, but, you know, the 4-year degree can be a barrier sometimes to getting folks in those roles and able to, you know, begin getting that experience. So that's really great to hear.
Yeah. And not every job needs a 4-year degree. I mean, you could be a network penetration assistant or vulnerability detection analyst, or there's some jobs that don't need a 4-year degree. It's a stepping stone to the next job, the more complex job. So, you know, it's all about growing. I mean, even once you get a 4-year degree, you don't stop. I mean, I got a law degree, I got a master's degree, I'm pursuing a PhD. You don't stop, right? So you just keep adding on and layering on. So we want to embrace as many students as we can.
Wonderful. And Diane, pivoting now, in addition to your incredible work with the NSA, you're an active member of WESIS, Women in Cybersecurity, having been the president of the Mid-Atlantic Region Affiliate and now a legal advisor and first president of the Mid-Atlantic Affiliate. Why is this initiative so important to you?
Thanks for asking that. So, you know, throughout my career, I was often the only woman in the room. And then I ended up, you know, being a backbencher to being at the table and then running the meeting. So there's a lot to just, I mean, it takes some time, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But you're still the only woman in the room. Right. And it's happened repeatedly at meetings at the Pentagon, where I was the NSA senior representative to an arms transfer and control group, a senior steering group. And so there's some things that you just, you want a community outside of your workplace that will support you and cheer you on. So the Women in Cybersecurity Organization, it's called WESIS for We Sisters. So we call each other, you know, cyber sisters, because it's really a sense of camaraderie and sorority, that a sense of that, so that you can kind of come together and have people saying, hey, what are my next steps? Where am I going? So I was the founder of the first WESIS affiliate for the whole entire WESIS, their first regional affiliate. I stood on the stage in Chicago and announced that a number of years ago. Since then, they now have, I think, probably 50 affiliates. So
wow.
I started the whole thing. And then I also started the first industry-specific affiliate, which I started this last year during the, well, in 2020, during the pandemic, the Critical Infrastructure Community Affiliate. So crossing women that work in critical infrastructure in cybersecurity roles. So I've now started two organizations that are subordinate to the national organization. But why did I do that? It's because you know, they started having data that women that were going into CISO roles were leaving. You know, they took the job, but they weren't staying. And then women that were thinking about going into it may have been discouraged to even going into it. So we can't help our country fill the gap if you don't feel like you're a part of something. I mean, every single human being has an innate need to be a part of something. And if I can help people feel like they're a part of something, it's incredibly rewarding. You know, I do a tremendous amount of mentoring hours, probably 10,000 at least over my lifetime. And most people say, you know, thanks for just listening. I've never felt like someone understood where I wanted to go, or this organization is helping me feel like I have people that understand me. And so it's just incredibly rewarding. So, you know, I'm helping people kind of explore new paths. So it's exciting.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's really inspiring to hear about your work.
And you highlighted, you know, Dr. Amberine Shiraj, who is amazing, you know, out of Tennessee Tech. She, you know, started WESIS with a grant from the National Science Foundation, the same organization that did the Gen Cyber grant with us. And she's hosted Gen Cyber camps. So, you know, she started WESIS on a grant, and then she's still, you know, she's active, obviously, in doing this. So I've taken a page from her book in terms of starting new initiatives and jumping feet in. So she's an incredible, you know, inspirational role model for many people.
Yeah, absolutely. She really is. And, you know, speaking of her and the work that you're doing, how can we get more girls and women interested and involved in cybersecurity?
You just have to show them that there are women in these roles. Mm. They did studies, you know, and these young girls years ago would only be going into nursing and teaching, because that's all they saw their grandmothers or their aunts or their neighbors doing. And so they just came out with multiple studies. And I know that you track this space very well. And if young women and young girls can't see a woman role model, they just don't see themselves. They have to know that this is the right place for them. So the more that we can communicate that this is a welcoming field, a diverse field, an encouraging field that's, you know, challenging and inquisitive, and you can keep learning, and it's you can make friends and have like amazing, you know, camaraderie, you know, across the globe. I mean, I've got people that support me, you know, in Australia and England and Canada. I mean, it's truly a very empowering community. So they have to be able to look at women and know, hey, there's a place for me. And so it's been very hard. You know, you look at, you know, Ada Lovelace and Hedy Lamarr and Grace Hopper and kind of what they experience. So you want to enable it to be easier so that they stay in the field and they blossom. And it's just, you know, we just want them to blossom and, you know, be confident in who they are and enjoy life, you know? So it's, hopefully I answered your question.
Yeah, yeah.
I know I went on for a long time there.
No, that's great. And for any women who are listening to this podcast who you know, are maybe thinking about entering cybersecurity, what advice would you give to them on why they are exactly what cyber needs?
Great. So I published two articles with the U.S. Cybersecurity Magazine. One was called Ladies Be the Energy, and the other one was called Seize the Moment. And it explains, I put in those articles very basically that cybersecurity, the skills that are needed for cybersecurity are actually natural skills of many women. The desire to team, the desire to collaborate, the desire to keep learning, you know, the way that you're inquisitive and you want to find out more. All of those natural kind of who you are, this field really adopts that and grows that. So that's why I say, take a look at the field. It really, you know, it can be, as I said, it's multidisciplinary in terms of the sectors. So if you wanted to go in the healthcare field and do cybersecurity, you can do that. My daughter, you know, is a pre-med student and she loves cybersecurity. The medical field needs a lot of cybersecurity experts, right? With data hacks and data privacy, especially for healthcare data. So you want to have your doctor know about cybersecurity as well. So every discipline needs someone that understands cybersecurity. So, you know, it's important for if, you know, men and women to go into the field, but especially for women, I think it's helpful to have gender diversity in the field for sure. Cyber criminals, you know, which you track as well, you know, they're constantly trying new tactics. We need critical thinkers to be as creative to stop their next move, right? And so if you like finding out different things, you could be, you know, a digital forensic expert. If you like looking up new research techniques, this is the field for you. If you think about doing, you know, software applications, this is the field for you. If you want to do hardware and develop that space, this is a space for you. There's so many avenues in the cybersecurity field that it's just an exciting field to go into. And it's incredibly not lucrative, I guess not the right word, but there's a lot of opportunity, you know, to do that. And there's a lot of opportunities for young people today that maybe want to start their own business, you know, in the area of cybersecurity. So my advice, if there's women listening that want to go into the cybersecurity field, is be confident, explore it, find a mentor, find multiple mentors, explore scholarships, you know, and just go for it. And if I can help you in any way, you know, let me know. I've always found that mentoring and helping and advocating for others has always, you know, helped me feel better about, you know, the world and doing a better job. And so, you know, anything I can do to help you, I'd be happy to do that.
That's wonderful. Thank you for offering that to our listeners as well. That's really meaningful. So thank you. And Diane, just thank you so much for joining us today. This has been such a fun conversation. It's been so great hearing about all these incredible programs that the NSA in partnership with other agencies are providing for folks to help get more people interested in cybersecurity to help protect our nation.
Great. Thank you, Hillary, and I appreciate the opportunity.
Our pleasure.
Have a great day.
Yeah, you
Thanks.
Too. I'm Hillary McClure, Multimedia Director at Cybercrime Magazine. Joining me today was Diane Janicek, NSA Training Director, Commandant of the National Cryptologic School. You can find Diane on LinkedIn, and you can learn more about the NSA on nsa.gov or follow them on Twitter at nsagov or at nsacyber for cyber-specific news. And you can listen to all of our podcast episodes at cybercrime.radio.